right. Jet, let me confirm. Are you back with us?
I am.
Beautiful. We are set and ready to roll for the MediaBits Power Hour, an educational opportunity for those of you in media sales, whether you're selling ads in print, in your newsletter, on your website, whether your circulation is paid, controlled, or free. Newspapers, magazines, specialty publications, and websites, you are in the right place. Thank you so much for joining us. We're always going to encourage you at the very beginning of all of our educational teleseminars to simply find a quiet spot, close your office door, try to find a way to not be distracted during the course of the next hours we're working together. Also, as always, it's not an accident. Over our 22-plus years putting on educational programs, it's not an accident that there's not something on your screen, which would simply create many-tasking and multitasking. Print off the key points that we are going to be sharing, and all of the best in adult research simply says the more notes you make and the more notes you take, the more that we're going to both transfer the knowledge and you will be in motion. We will have infused knowledge, simply the what we consider the coach approach. In addition, thank you so much to those of you who have sent your questions in. We're going to be working our way through those in conjunction with a very full agenda. Today's topic, we're going to be talking about MediaBits and how they go out and buy $10 million in annual sales. And the tag to that is, and would you like some new revenue? In other words, we want you to listen closely to the observations that Jed is describing about what buyers and advertisers are saying and what they're looking for and what their expectations are to have the ultimate win-win. Before we formally get into the part of the presentation, I'll ask Jed to say a few opening words about MediaBids. This is Ernest. I'll say a few opening words about Power Hour, and then we're going to catapult in nonstop. So, Jed, just a few opening words. I know we have lots to share related to MediaBids, but just a little quick capsule about MediaBids, and then when we launch in, I'll have you go deeper on that side, okay?
Sure, yeah. My name's Jed Gould. I'm the president of MediaBids. Thank you all for joining us. Thanks to Ernest, who will do his best to keep me on topic and keep me focused, which is not always an easy task. Ernest does a great job with these teleseminars, and I encourage you to, if it's your first time in a teleseminar, to go back and listen to some of our prior teleseminars, which Ernest has been the primary speaker on, because they're very educational and very professional. So he does a fantastic job of educating us each month and on a variety of different topics, which are always relevant to making your professional career in publications more effective.
Well, thank you so much, Jed. I've certainly enjoyed all of our work over now the last 11-plus years. It's always a delight. I love the MediaBids story, and I know that we have lots that we're going to be sharing today, not just about MediaBids, but more specifically about what you learn and what you're hearing from ad agencies and ad buyers and decision makers, and then what you see and observe related to ad selling success and ad performance success. And so all of you know Jed is very gracious in the things that we share here at Power Hour, but frankly, I sit at the edge of my seat, Jed, respectfully. I love when you begin to roll. So we got lots to cover here today. So all of you know my name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. I began in the advertising sales industry back in 1986, so three-plus decades ago, launched three of my own publications, loved being an entrepreneur. Then I moved over and was a leader in a billion-dollar media group, and suddenly I was immersed in quarterly board meetings, and you didn't miss a quarterly board number by a penny, let alone a dollar. I must tell you, you put coal under pressure, you get diamonds, and those are some interesting years working for a publicly held group. Launched Power Hour in 1995. Today we've coached and guided more than 2,500 advertising sales teams and companies and so forth in 13 time zones around the world. There's kind of this universal language about ad sales. It's really been great over the last 22-plus years. Most specifically, in addition to executive coaching and team coaching, we have a deep understanding of the web, social media, LinkedIn, and really our flagship is every Tuesday we have a sales academy. All of our academy members listen to a message, plus have materials on a Monday. It takes about 15 minutes to prepare, and then every Tuesday we have live open mic. Similar to what we're doing here, the difference is that we're speaking back and forth. Come join us. Go to powerhour.com, and you can learn more about that. All right, Jed. Rocking. Let's see. MediaBids, I'm just going to open up with some opening words as far as the prep for today. MediaBids buys $10 million in advertising a year, newspapers and magazines on the United States and Canada, Great White North, just up in Montreal recently, which means you hear sales pitches every day from media ad sales professionals. Today we're going to discuss the three biggest mistakes media ad sales and from their perspective and clients' perspective. But, I mean, we should put on the table that there are good things that happen in presentations. There are things that don't go so well. There are the right ways to sell into a presentation, and there, frankly, are things that will deter us, right, from making a sale. So let's start with the first point, and you focus on and say, hey, look, the way that our ad-buying clients today look at advertising has dramatically changed in the last 10 years. Today we're going to talk about, from their perspective, what changed, what they're looking for, related to their advertising expenditures. Jed, the floor is yours.
Great. Well, let me just, so as I mentioned in my introduction, you know, I'm the president of MediaBids. I love and understand print publications. I had been a publisher of a small chain of weekly newspapers prior to starting MediaBids. I was a newspaper reporter prior to that. I really enjoy the business and feel that that print publications are, you know, it's not an exaggeration to say are an essential part of democracy, right? I really feel that that they are serving a role that no one else is serving, and so their continued survival and success is something that I really take very seriously. I believe wholeheartedly that they make the country and the world a better place. That being said, I sit in a very unique perspective, and as do people here at MediaBids, and in that we are in the middle between advertisers and publications, not necessarily in a sort of traditional ad agency role, but we're really more advocates for the publications, is how we see ourselves. We buy a lot of ads we have several thousand advertising clients, and some are more active than others, and we buy millions of dollars worth of ads every year in print advertising. And as a result, we spend a lot of time speaking to sales reps from publications every day. And there's a fundamental disconnection between what our advertisers want and what publications are selling. And this disconnect is what I thought it would be interesting to focus our teleseminar around today, because I'm not sure on the publication side how aware people are of this growing gulf between how advertisers see the world and how publications want them to see the world. What I mean by the disconnect is essentially it boils down to what publications are selling is not what advertisers want to buy. Publications are selling space. Advertisers think they're buying results, right? So a publication is focused on selling a tangible product, whether that be a physical ad or whether that be an online ad or an ad in the newsletter. It really doesn't matter. The bottom line is that publication salespeople are trying to sell something that advertisers really don't care about. They're not buying the same thing that publications are trying to sell. So this creates an awkward situation for salespeople, which is perfectly understandable, right? I mean, this misunderstanding seems to happen almost every day in our office. And I understand we're dealing with primarily national or regional advertisers. We're dealing primarily with advertisers who sort of by definition, because they've come to us, they're more interested in response than, let's say, you know, maybe a local furniture store might be. But the feelings and the attitudes of our advertisers are much, much more common than the feelings of advertisers who are more traditional, who are buying an ad only in the hopes that, you know, people will see their name and remember them the next time they need a product. The idea that advertising is for a direct purpose and has a direct payoff is something that more and more advertisers, I'd be willing to say, you know, literally, you know, the vast majority of advertisers is a philosophy that they've really adopted. So this is something that publications, by and large, are not selling to currently. It's not a result of some misunderstanding by the salesperson or ignorance on the part of the salesperson. Most salespeople that publications hire are great. They're hardworking. They're diligent. They're extremely optimistic, sometimes, you know, annoyingly so. It's extremely friendly. They have good sales pitches. They're informed, knowledgeable about their publication. I like them. I like talking to them. I think if my advertising clients were to speak to them, they would like them too. The problem isn't the salespeople or even specifically their, you know, what they're saying. The problem is that the philosophy behind how they're trying to sell. They're literally trying to sell something that most of our advertisers, you know, don't want to buy. And that doesn't mean that our advertisers don't want to buy publications. It means that when you talk to advertisers about space, they're not interested. That's not a quantity. That's not a thing that excites them. And the sad part of this is that every day we talk to publications too often we talk to publications that are, you know, that are shrinking or closing. And I believe wholeheartedly, after sitting here for 20 years, that a large part of this is due to the fact that publications have this sort of institutionalized attachment to an outdated philosophy. And it can be fixed. It can be different. It really can. But the first step is sort of identifying the problem. Most advertisers I speak with have a very clear philosophy, and that is that nothing matters except results. Nothing matters except results. It doesn't matter if they buy a quarter page. It doesn't matter if they buy a half page or a full page or a classified. They want results, right? They want results now, right? They're not looking for for building up brand awareness in 5, 7, 13, 26 insertions, right? They want results today or next time the paper comes out or next time the magazine comes out or the next time the e-newsletter comes out, right? They want to feel the difference between what it was like before they advertised and what it was like after they advertised. And oftentimes, you know, their timeline is around a marketing meeting or, you know, some internal deadline that they have for sales that's really putting pressure on them. But they want results. So for advertisers, nothing matters except results. Publications, on the other hand, it seems it seems that they sort of have the opposite philosophy in many cases, and in that everything matters except results, right? They are concerned with all aspects of an ad except the results that it brings in. Publications we speak with about the ads we buy are not interested in how the ad performs. They're interested in everything except how the ad performs. They've fulfilled their obligation to the advertiser. If the ad runs, it looks good, and it's distributed. Period. End of story. End of transaction. That is it. And that's the disconnect, right? For advertisers, when the ad appears, that's just the start. And that really is an almost unimportant event. For most advertisers, they want to see the results. For most publications, they don't want to hear about the results. And that's a huge gulf. Advertisers believe every dollar they spend should yield some sort of results, and publications believe they've fulfilled their obligations when they put out the product they promised to put out. That's the gulf we're talking about here today. is how do we bridge that gulf, and how did we sort of grow so far apart?
Yep, and if I can just insert. If I could just insert, Jed, related to this part about ad results and ad performance, I'll never forget. I had an advertiser back in the early 80s, three decades ago, literally a carpet cleaning company that, we ran a coupon. It was in a city publication, and all he wanted to do was show me whether or not we brought those coupons in or not. That goes back three decades, right? I remember talking to those who placed ads in Yellow Pages and then being able to show me call logs, just the sheer number of calls coming from their Yellow Page ad three decades ago. Conversations like that, whether it was promotions, coupons, response, Yellow Pages, whatever. I remember talking to advertisers that had placed ads in the newspaper and would show me their log. I remember going back to advertisers, and saying at the end of every month, can you show me the results we generated? How many phone calls? How many results? Let's break out the ROI. Let's break out the closing ratio and so forth. So, this, I know you're going to talk about the gulf, and yet in my world, I can't ever remember selling ads. And here I am three decades in, still talking about the same thing. Show me the results, show me the money, right? And then in the last 10 years, you add the digital component, the ability of Google to be able to track and measure everything, on a click basis. And that whole world, all that's done is just there's just a turbo on what's always been the conversation. If I spend a dollar, do I get $2 back? If I spend a dollar, do I get nothing back, right? I mean, that has really been a reoccurring theme for as long as I can remember, and yourself as well, right?
Right. I don't think it's anything new. I think that advertisers, by and large, have sort of always felt this way. Mm-hmm. But I think that there was sort of a feeling among many advertisers, going back even 5 years, there was a feeling that advertising was one of those things you kind of just had to do, and if you did it, it was going to help you in ways that were ways were sort of undefined and maybe kind of a little bit fluffy around the edges. But the point is that if you stopped advertising, right, that was when you were really in trouble. You had to advertise. You weren't sure what you were getting, but you were getting something, right?
Right.
And
that's
so
right. No,
and so the
right.
But the big difference today is that has changed. Right there, and it's going to keep changing. Unfortunately, it's going to keep changing in the direction of quantifying every advertising dollar and giving advertisers more tools for understanding exactly how their dollars are being spent and what they're generating. It's really, in many ways, it's sort of not fair. It may not be fair to a medium like a print publication, but it's the reality. And And so if you want to attract these advertisers and you want them to, you know, consider your publication a viable source for their advertising dollars, then, you know, you have to play the game. The reason why it is this way and it's getting worse is that every online medium out there is telling these advertisers essentially the same story, that they don't have to pay unless they generate sales. There's lots of different ways that is sliced and sort of presented, but by and large, advertisers are told that online. And in the world of nothing matters except results, there's just infinite options for advertisers. You know, Google, Yellow Pages, mobile networks, banner ads, Groupon, Facebook. I mean, we've all heard them. And on the other hand, you know, you've got publications who just don't want to enter into that conversation, don't want to talk about results. And one of the things that I hope you get from today's teleseminar, you know, in light of what may come across as sort of some harsh language towards print, is that it doesn't have to be that way. You know, and what print has going for it is that it works, right? It gets results. It does well. And it does well when you compare it to these other mediums. You just don't know it because you're not measuring it. If you don't know the results that you're getting, it's because you're not taking the time to go out and to find out how the ads are producing. That is something which, you know, which is just a huge, huge missed opportunity. You know, advertisers don't do it on their own. They're lazy, and they hate the risk associated with the idea that they're going to buy space and not know what they get. If they're a small company, they're worried about spending money because they don't have much money. And if it's a large company, they're worried about spending money because if the marketing person who's making the decision about the ad is wrong, you know, they're in trouble. And what I mean by advertisers are lazy, it's because most of them are not going to dissect the numbers that they have available to them to really understand how much risk they're assuming when they buy an ad in your publication versus when they buy an ad in Facebook or buy an ad, you know, in Google. I mean, to my point about laziness, you know, using your example, Ernest, you know, mm-hmm. you were saying that, you know, 30 years ago, you know, you were involved mm-hmm. in helping to count the coupons. You were involved in looking at the phone bills, right? I mean, the advertisers weren't doing it on their own. And there may be some that do it on their own, but, it's a very small percentage. And that's a huge advantage that a lot of these online mediums have over a conventional print publication, is that it's all built in, right? And it's fancy, and it's easy to use, and it's easy to see, and it's easy to track and understand. You know, publications have to work hard to produce that same type of information for their advertisers. But if they do, and if they can, they will oftentimes be pleased with the results that they're able to show their advertisers. You know, we have so think about that, right? Think about the what an advertiser is looking at when they're deciding whether to buy an ad in your print publication versus deciding whether to buy, you know, to spend more money with Google or on Facebook, right? They're going to this online portal. They're looking. They're seeing their dollars. They're seeing exactly what they're getting for their dollars, right? They think that those clicks are worth a certain amount to them. Very often they do a very bad job of tracking that and of keeping track of what happens to those clicks and whether they end up resulting in sales. Versus the media kits that, you know, we get piles of them here, And I'm sure most advertisers do who are spending any amount of money, when they're getting a media kit, you know, the odds that an advertiser is going to go through and dissect that media kit and really understand it and understand, you know, what the best value for them really is, and read all about, you know, what the publication is saying about itself, as well written and as glorious as they are, I am here to tell you that I don't think that any of my advertisers have ever read a media kit. I mean, that may be a little bit of exaggeration, but man, not much, right? Because they don't care. They care about results. They care about what they're going to get for spending their money. And they're so risk adverse that unless I can make it an easy decision for them, the odds of them making a decision in favor of print is very low. So it's all about being, you know, being clear and being and making it, you know, and making it as sort of understandable to advertisers as possible.
Let me just insert. I mean, I've seen this. Here's just and Jed, you've heard me talk about this. A dear friend from my high school years went to work for Ogilvy & Mather in Chicago, you know, just top 10 ad agency around the world. And she used to talk to me about long copy, right, and ads filled with, you know, content. Today, she's the global director for a company that literally makes 95% of all treadmills are made under their company name, and they're all white labeled. Today, all she does is direct response, TV, media, Google, you name it, you know, and that's all she does. So I've even watched her swing from that pendulum, as you're talking about, from one side to the other, where she was at the epitome of branding, right? In those days, you know, look at this ad for Rolls-Royce. It's got, you know, 8,000 words. You know, there wasn't even a picture of the Rolls-Royce, right? You know, I look at Mad Men, right, when I watch it on TV, and I go, gosh, those are crazy days. You'd come in and you'd pitch, and if your pitch was a good idea, you got the automobile deal. My gosh, have we come a long way. So for all of us to recognize, the things you're hearing from Jed is the reality. Our media kit is a cornerstone of what we do. But in the end, as Jed is saying, we have to generate and show and prove the results. And there's a variety of ways that we do that. No doubt, the tracking of clicks, the tracking of leads, the tracking of phone calls. But then there's also the other piece, right? The testimonials, when an advertiser says, we've never had a better source, you know, than you, or you're our primary, or look at the incredible sales that we generated this past weekend. Always a reminder that we have the hard numbers. We also have the soft words that further confirm those hard numbers as well, because frankly, buyers go away. Guess what? If you could be sitting down with a decision maker who's brand new and has never heard the success beyond the hard numbers like Jed is talking about and we're sharing with you here today that matter so much, you also have the words of saying, look, but this is also what your team has said, or your marketing director has said, or your executive team has described some of the other things that we're doing. So never forget on that side as well that you want to capture all of those opportunities, soft and hard, to be able to describe your win from that perspective. So Jed, in terms of you know, the points that we're covering here today, and when we think about sort of you know, the opportunity, you know, for those who are selling ads and making certain that they're really working from the best practices, what else might we share with them here today?
Well, you know, I think that you know, to me, the biggest thing, the biggest shift can be sort of summarized in this way, that if you're out there and you're selling, sales is not, you know, like when I was selling the newspaper, you know, I would try to get my local advertisers to sort of, you know, to try it, right, to take a chance, to try an ad. Right? Sales is no longer about convincing people to take a chance. Sales is, I believe, now about convincing people that they're not taking a chance, right? That it's a guaranteed thing. That the money they're spending is being spent so well and so effectively that it's really no risk at all. And I think that that's a big kind of paradigm shift for publications. I think that a lot of publications still sort of feel like if they could just get you into the paper, you will sort of be there forever because, you know, they're the paper. And I think that what we're describing here today is an advertising war that's going on out there. You know, you have a situation where you have an enormous amount of online inventory. It's driving down prices online. And the collateral damage of this war is the sales approach that many print publications have used historically and continue to use today. So you've got to shift to show instead of taking a chance, buying an ad is not taking a chance, that your publication is a sure bet, that the advertiser is going to make money from spending money with you, that your readers need what it is that advertiser is selling, that they're waiting for this outlet for their money, right? That they need this. Your job as a publication salesperson is to sort of connect this circuit, right? Complete the circuit between this group of people out there who need what I'm selling and my client. I think that really can only be done with a different approach, a different sort of mindset than what publications are used to. If it were me and I was out there selling today, I would sort of get out of the business of selling space. I don't want to sell space, unless I can tell an advertiser how that space is going to equate to their results. I don't want to sell someone a long-term contract unless I can tell that advertiser how that long-term contract is going to generate them more results. And I'm going to stop trying to get advertisers to buy special sections or online ads or anything else unless I can actually show them what it is that their ad dollars are going to get them. I think it's a shift in how advertisers are thinking about the world. But if all that matters is results, and again, if you go with my premise that an enormous number of advertisers, the majority of advertisers, now believe that all that matters is results, then what publications are really selling is an audience and the buying power that's associated with that audience. Knowing that audience makes selling a hell of a lot easier. If you know what it is your readers are buying, if you know what it is your readers are likely to buy and what they've bought in the past, that's all information which if I'm a smart advertiser, that's the kind of information that I'm way, way more worried about than virtually anything else. I'm more worried about that than price. I'm more worried about that than almost anything else. It's because what you're telling me is essentially the likelihood that I'm, the likelihood that I'm going to be successful. Does that make sense, Ernest?
No. Positively. And certainly it also ties in, right? And that is to say, is this the most cost-effective way, right, of justifying an ad price on the other side? So let's go down that path and talk about what can we do to convince a potential advertiser, right, that our publication, that our advertising medium is the best vehicle for their product or service. What might we share related to suggestions?
So the biggest thing, the biggest thing that I find is that it really boils down to understanding your advertiser's business. I sort of go through kind of a mental checklist whenever I'm talking to an advertiser. What are they selling? How much does it cost? What's the offer that they're going to put in the ad? What are their margins for the product or service that they're selling? and what's the lifetime value of a customer. So just to go through those, you know, what are they selling? How much does it cost? You know, are they selling a walk-in bathtub that costs $15,000 to install, or are they selling a bouquet of flowers for $19.99? You know, obviously, the difference in price means a difference in response. And it also means a difference in the amount of response that advertiser needs to get to be successful. What's the offer in the ad? You know, advertisers play a large role in the success or failure of an ad, right? It's not all on the publication's shoulders. They've gotta be willing to give you an offer, to give you a product or service that's for sale that you think someone wants to buy, right? It doesn't do you an awful lot of good to run an ad, track the results, understand how it does, if the product or service that they're selling is something that no one wants, right? So we worry about that a lot. You know, what is it that they're offering in the ad? What sort of discounts are they offering? You know, how is it priced in comparison to, you know, to the same offer that they have on their website, right? That's the kiss of death. If someone is selling something. But they are offering the same product on their website for, you know, a slightly lower price, you know, you might as well not even advertise. It's just a complete waste of the advertiser's money, because it's never going to work. Because what we've found over and over and over again are that consumers today are smart. They will shop around. And so if they see an ad in your publication and they're interested in the product, they will go online, see what the price is, and if the price is the same, then you'll probably do pretty well. You know, they'll respond via your ad. If the price is higher in your publication, then they're not going to respond. And so all of this matters because you want to be in a situation where you're able to go to an advertiser and say, I know your ad worked, right? In my publication, we were able to sell, you know, 4 walk-in tubs from your, you know, from the 2 ads that you did last month. If you tell me that a walk-in tub is worth $15,000 per installation to you, you sold $60,000 worth of merchandise. Out of that $60,000, if you tell me that your margin on these things is, and people always lie about this, so you gotta, you know, round up a little bit. But, you know, if you tell me your margin is even 10%, right, then that means that you made $6,000 worth of sales off of the product that you sold from your ads. Out of that $6,000, you spent whatever, $2,000 with me, whatever the cost of the ads were, you know. And in addition to that, you know, you also told me that the lifetime value of a customer was, you know, was something more than the initial purchase, right? It's something more because these things break, because people want the add-ons, people want, you know, additional merchandise that you sell. So all the lifetime value of a customer becomes something higher than the initial purchase. These are all issues that you need to define with an advertiser prior to them starting to advertise. Because if you can define these things, then you can also define success, right? And what you want to be able to do is to walk into the advertiser and say, hey, Joe, great. We did really, really well last month. Now, whether that guy ends up buying more ads from you or not almost becomes academic, right? Because you have this data. You know that you can sell walk-in tubs. I'm just using that as an example. It could be almost anything. But you know you can sell walk-in tubs, right? You know that your readers need walk-in tubs. So you know, if Joe says, you know what, we don't have the money this month, we can't do it, you say, you know what, no problem, fine. Because in about you know, in about 10 minutes, you should be able to get another walk-in tub person on the phone, and you could say, hey, I sold 4 tubs for Joe last month. You know, I got customers. I have every reason to believe I could do the same thing or more this month. You know, you want to sell 4 tubs? You know, great. I mean, at that point, right, price does not become an issue. The size of the ad doesn't become an issue, or at least as big an issue, right? It becomes sort of the vehicle to these customers. But the main thing is you have the customers. You control the customers, and you know what the customers are buying. You know, that's an incredibly valuable thing, and it puts you as a salesperson in an enormous position of power, right? Because that is, you no longer are trying to sell based on space, based on the hope that space will result in sales. What you're doing is you're doing the inverse, right? You're selling sales, and space becomes the vehicle to get to those sales.
Mm-hmm. And again, parallels from the research going back three decades ago. I'm listening to you describe this. I'm going, 3 decades ago we were doing this, and we're still doing it today. We're sitting down with advertisers saying, look, let's not talk about what the price is or the size. Why don't we just talk about the results you want? Because I can walk you through various results and various placements, and I've got the historical to show you and walk you through. So let's talk about how many phone calls or how many transactions you'd like or how many leads you would like. Then I'll back in and show you which ad size or which placement, and then we'll back into the return on the investment. Oh, and then we'll back into the price of the ad. So, Jed, to your point, it was the same conversation then as it remains today, right? Focus on, for example, we had a client that we were talking to about doing some online advertising. And she said, well, what should the budget be? And I said, well, how much activity do you want? It's not about how much the budget is. It's about how much activity and volume and velocity you want. If you spend $3 or $300 or $3,000, you're going to get what? A different velocity, correct?
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and, mm-hmm. and you know, I really feel like, you know, the this part of the conversation is something that publications have been incredibly resistant to adopt, you know, and as an industry, they really have shied away from the idea that that what they are selling is not just space. It's really about the readership and the results. It's really about, you know, what it's going to generate. You know, we probably buy in somewhere in the neighborhood of 700 or 800 publications a month. And I asked the people in my office in getting ready for this call, I asked people in my office and I know this is true for myself, I've never had, nor have they, had a publication call up and say, hey, how were the results? You know, how'd we do? You know, did we generate, you know, did we generate what you were hoping? You know, not only that, but we also have had a hard time remembering a situation where we ever had a publication say to us, what kind of results are you hoping to get from this ad? What would be successful? Define success. Right? What does success mean? What does it look like? You know, is it one call? Is it 50 calls? Is it 3 people walking into a retail store, or is it 300 people walking into a retail store? You know, it's just something that for whatever reason, you know, print salespeople have not shifted their philosophy on this, and it's really a shame because I am here to tell you, I mean, we sort of have 2 sides of our business. We have what I've been describing here today, sort of our straight ad buying, you know, process that we do, where we're just, you know, we're paying for space. We also do a lot of response-based ads, straight response-based ads, where we're paying publications based on the results that they generate. We put unique phone numbers in every ad. We track everything, right? We track the results from both the response-based ads and the straight paid buy ads, and we do that with, as I mentioned, unique phone numbers. We also do it with unique URLs. There's lots of ways to do it. And what you will find if you really drill down on this stuff is that print has a wonderful story to tell. The responses that are generated from print close at about 50%, 50%. The response that is generated from online advertising, all of those mediums that I mentioned earlier, Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, it doesn't matter, all of them, right? They're closing at less than 0.5%, right? So, and that's even high for a lot of them. I mean, you talk to some advertisers, and it's almost unmeasurable, the difference between a click and a sale. So the way that people interact with the print medium is fundamentally different than the way that people interact with an online medium. When people respond to a print ad, they respond by and large because they have either a specific question or they are ready to purchase. The way that people respond to online mediums is much, much different. It's much more casual. It's much more non-committal, and therefore it's much less valuable, right? So most online responses are really worth almost nothing. So when you're up against, as we all are, when you're up against Google and Facebook and the rest of them, right, the question to ask advertisers is not so much like, you know, how much are you spending with them or how much do you pay per click. The question to ask them is how many sales are you making as a result of that, you know, of that service? There might be a few types of, you know, of services and goods out there that do very, very well on Google. They make lots and lots of sales. But man, I have not run into any. You know, I think by and large, it's, you know, by and large, the what you're finding is that you know, online advertising is not generating the kinds of sales that businesses believe that it is. So in order to combat that, in order to be able to speak to it, right, you have to have sort of a deeper conversation with advertisers. You have to be able to ask them, you know, about close rates, right, about, as Ernest mentioned earlier, the ROI, about, you know, the comparison of the ROI between Google and something like an ad in your publication.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so let's pause here for just a moment. We have a number of questions that have come in, and I think we can sort of address quickly, and then others I'd like us to just go, you know, peel back a little deeper on. So let me just field the quick one from Michelle in New York, who says, what do you say when a customer tells you their money is spent for the year? There, back to Jed's point, if they want to sell, you know, 4 more tubs than they are currently doing, there's always money to be had if there's money to be gained on the other side. The point about my money is spent or you're not in the budget, again, is the age-oldest smoke, so that you're not going to get a meeting, an appointment, or an opportunity. Don't misunderstand, during the months of September, October, November, we work real hard to get tucked into the budget on the other side, but budget is really a sandwich. Every company has rev on the top, expenses in the middle, profitability on the bottom, and if you can come to them and say, look, we're going to go sell 4 more tubs, back to Jed's example, give me $2, we'll sell $8 in tubs, companies will lean in and say, show me you can do that, validate that, and off we go. There was another question in here about, Jed, I want to pose this one to you. Allie in Georgia says, what are the strategies to sell a lead-generating product in a good economy when clients don't need more business? Think about that.
I don't believe it. I don't. I mean, then sell them a help wanted ad, right? Because
yeah.
Because if they're truly that busy, I mean, short of like, you know, an ice cream stand on a hot summer day or something, I mean, I can't even contemplate that. I mean, if they're a real business, then they've got to be able to deal with an expanded demand. I mean, we run into situations where this happens, you know, more frequently than we'd like. We run into situations where we'll get a really compelling offer from an advertiser. You know, let's just say, you know, Omaha Steaks, for example. You know, they'll have like a really nice offer that a lot of consumers want. It'll do really, really well. We'll get tens of thousands of sales from the ads that we're running, and then they'll run out of the product. You know, they ran out of whatever it is, kielbasa or something, you know. They have to switch. But most businesses have other things they can focus on. I mean, maybe it's not exactly the same, but you know, it's still around, you know, it's still sort of in there. They're able to service
them. Right. Got it. I was watching Sunday morning, just last Sunday, and there was a guy who makes custom globes, and the globes take anywhere from 3 to 6 months. And he did say he had a 2-year backlog. That would be the single best or one of the few examples that I would agree on that side. Here's another one.
Well, Ernest, real quickly. I mean, I will say that the question might be referring to service industries like painters, contractors, that type
Correct.
Of thing.
Correct.
I mean, and that can be tough. But here's one thing you can do, right, is you can, if you really want to get into that type of business, and we've stayed away from it a little bit because it can be kind of messy, but if you want to do it, then what I would do is I would take those leads that painter doesn't want, and I'd give them to another painter. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why, if you're doing a lead gen thing, which you mentioned, there's no reason why it has to be specific to that painter. You can have a generic painting lead gen phone number, and then you can sell those leads based on demand.
Yep, got it. I love that. And Allie, we're hoping that is helpful for you. If it is, let us know. And if not, if you have an expanded question, ping us a note. Here comes another question from Christine in Wisconsin who says, how do you overcome Facebook buying into the buy and sell section of Facebook versus newspaper classified? Any specific comment about the effectiveness of the classified portion of Facebook versus a newspaper classified?
You know, I think that each of them has very, very different audiences. And so if someone is selling something that is easy to sell, if it's a free couch or if it's a car that someone is, you know, if it's a 1955 Chevrolet that's been sitting in your garage for the last 30 years and you're selling it for $200, like, you can sell it quickly and cheaply on sites like Facebook. And so those are tough to compete with. However, there's a whole other group of things that are being sold that are probably going to be much more effectively advertised in a newspaper than they are on Facebook. You know, like, for example, you know, it could be something that's of higher value, right? It could be something that is more likely to be more locally interesting. I think that, you know, I think that classifieds very often get overlooked by advertisers and by publications. You know, there's still a very, very well-read section of publications. Even, you know, I think that they're probably, you know, they've probably lost more credibility with advertisers than they have with readers, right? I think people still read them. And so I would say that it's the kind of thing where, you know, depending on the product, you know, if it's a free couch, then yeah, it's tough to compete with. But if it's something, you know, something more specific and something more valuable, then, you know, then I think that we've had really good luck with classifieds, we've had really good luck with classifieds selling sort of traditional products and services. But there's no doubt, right, that for individuals buying classifieds, that those types of services are cheap and they're easy. And if you don't care if it works quickly, then, you know, then it's tougher to compete with.
Okay, one more question before we pause at the top of the hour. Maureen asks, How do you compare and win with print advertising over social media advertising when social is so cheap? I just want to comment on the social is so cheap. It's really not so cheap given the time and work to be effective. And then on the other side, when you really drill down and you look at the work that companies are doing on Facebook, on Twitter, on their blogs, and then you stop and look at levels of engagement and return on investment, it actually isn't so cheap. But oftentimes they say, oh, we're doing it ourselves, oh, we're taking care of it. The other side of it, how do we win on print advertising? Well, it starts with, as you've heard from Jed, which is what are you generating in terms of volume and velocity? How are those leads? How are those leads converting into tours or on-sites or next steps or phone calls or emails? How are those converting into presentations, appointments, tours, sales, and revenue, right? There's that whole progression depending on what space and what sector you're selling to, right? And then you've got the ROI. You know, if you're selling ads, you know, for a retail store versus an RV dealer, right, you're playing in two different spaces with different purchase points and different timelines. You know, what is the timeline if you're selling ads into senior living, for example? Senior living could be a five-year curve before a family decides that mom or dad need to be moved to assisted living, but they might be responding to an ad today. So where do you take the length of time to make a decision and factor that in? You know, so Maureen, just my first cut on this is we've got to know our space. We've got to know our advertisers. We have to know what they consider their results and their ROI. We have to also understand what is more profitable. Is an RV dealer more consumed with selling trailer hitches, repair services, or the RVs? Where are the price points in each of those probably extreme examples? But the point is that every business has different markups, different profit margins, and you also want to factor that in. Jed, some comments for Maureen before we wrap up at the top of the hour?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that we're very often in advertising, we think about these types of things like it's World War II or something. Like it's, you know, there's a war and there'll be one winner and one loser. And chances are that's not the way it's going to turn out, right? There's going to be many, many winners and many, many losers. So it's not really Facebook or print. It's Facebook and print, right? And so what your job is to figure out, you know, what portion of the audience you have that other people don't have. How's your readership and how's your audience different and going to reach different people than they're reaching on Facebook? Facebook is not cheap, and neither is Google. And so, you know, as Ernest mentioned, there's a lot of ammunition to sort of fight that battle. But what's difficult to fight is the feeling that a lot of marketers have that it's just the place to be, period. I'm never going to get fired for running an ad on Facebook the same way I used to not get fired for running an ad in the New York Times, right? Bottom line is people are going to keep doing it. But that doesn't mean that you can't sort of, you know, chip away at that. And you can't still gain a significant portion of their budget by showing them that the readers you have are going to turn into buyers. And I don't care where they're spending their money. If you can show them that, they will buy.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And Maureen, thank you as well for your questions and for so many of you that have joined us both live and will listen to this long after we wrap up and finish here. Thank you so much for being part of our MediaBids Power Hour. You've been listening to Jed speak about the trends and observations and the buying of across $10 million annual, you know, dollars in terms of that. They have a lot of insight. Take the time to go look at MediaBids. Observe the work that they're doing. If you're currently working with them, you know the success they generate for and with you. And if you're not, MediaBids is a place that will help you drive additional revenue. But even more importantly, we'll pose questions to you that will help you be a better media group, will help you tighten up your selling strategy. So, you know, they're going to ask tough questions. They want to know what it is you do, how you do it, who you serve, okay? So all the way around, you'll love working with Jed and their team. And then lastly, our site, Power Hour. Just come into powerhour.com. You'll see we have an entire section all about media sales and ad sales success. And again, our flagship is our Tuesday Sales Academy. So come join us. Thank you so much, Jed. Always a pleasure working here together. So appreciate when you carve out these windows and really lean in and tell us point blank what you're hearing, what you're seeing, and what you're observing. It's the honesty that counts most, and the things that you're sharing for so many are not only spot on, but in other ways makes us twitch. And in that twitch, we grow, okay? So thank you so much for being so honest with your feedback, okay?
And I welcome any, you know, if you want to follow up and tell me, you know, ask questions or tell me why you think I'm wrong about something, I welcome the feedback. So let me know.
Duly noted. Jed welcomes the feedback and is always interested in a game of chess as long as you play at a very high level because he is the man. All righty, Jed. You're the best. Always a pleasure, man. Thank you to you and your team.
Okay.
Always appreciate all the support, and we'll be back next month, okay?
All right. Thanks, Ernest. Thanks, everyone.
All right, everybody. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.